Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of How Bette Davis Saved My Life. I'm here with none other than my fabulous co-star. Again, I'm Moya, and my fabulous co-star is...
Georgia.
Georgia, that's right. We are here to give you another dose of what you need the most. Life lessons from Hollywood, from Bette's ladies. And today we have another spectacular film for you to grow on called Bad Day at Black Rock. So, you know, every now and then we deviate from the norm. We don't always do Bette's movies, as we always tell you. So we have a doozy. We have a dude film, if you will. Dude in air quotes. We have Bad Day at Black Rock starring none other than Spencer Tracy, Robert Ryan, Walter Brennan, Anne Francis. We also have Lee Marvin, Ernest Borgnine, and John Erickson, and very early on in their careers. And we're going to get into some trivia about how early on they are in their careers. And we chose this movie because we want to do movies for guys. All the movies that we do, they are for everyone, is in our opinion. But some of them are a little bit more lady leaning, if you will. And so, you know, we recognize that. But this one it's delicious. That's our word, delicious. It's Spencer Tracy in a freaking action movie. And George is going to tell you how old he was, George, like 55 or something like that?
54. 54. Yeah, 54.
He's old.
Yeah, the guy's got high blood pressure.
We're not laughing at high blood pressure, so leave us alone.
That's right, we're not. And he's overweight, let's face it. Not exactly reaction hero type, right?
Right. So this is just like an action movie for him. He did some other stuff, but not really. This is like a real action picture. And is this his only Western? I can't really remember, but, you know, it's a Western, it's film noir, it's a thriller, it's all that. So it's a little different for him.
That's right. It is.
So, Georgia.
So, you want me to set up the basic premise?
Of course.
Okay. Well, all the action takes place within 24 hours. And the setting is a very tiny, remote, almost deserted. It's a town in the desert. It's the name of the town, as you can guess, is Black Rock. And Tracy plays a character by the name of John McCready. So, and I'm going to try and refer to him as McCready. Mm-hmm. And he arrives in this town, and it's a he's kind of a mysterious person.
Right.
And the townspeople treat him with very open hostility.
But I
and it's not explained. You don't really know
why. I was
why.
Just about but to ask you, did I miss that? Because you're right, it don't explain why.
And there's a two-way mystery in this, because he's kind of mysterious, but yet the town itself is also, they're very suspicious of him. They treat him in a very hostile way. And it's obvious very early on that they're hiding a big secret. And eventually it gets worse. We realize McCready's life is in danger.
Right.
And there's nobody to help him. I mean, he's out on a limb. He's out on his own. And so being our hero here, he decides to get to the bottom of what's going on. And the citizens are left wanting to know why he is also so determined to find, there's a specific person he's looking for in this right. town when he arrives. He's looking for a farmer mm-hmm. when he gets there. Mm-hmm. And so begins our mystery.
I suspect, so this is, I interjected my own personal view. Black Rock, Bad Day Black Rock is not, it's pretty much, it is what it is, but you can, there are some underlying meanings in this. So to me, the reason why I thought they were so suspicious was guilt. Look how Spencer Tracy, so like Georgia described, he arrives on a train. The train is in the middle of nowhere. It's a totally dystopian type situation. And George, as I looked at it, like, this is almost like Mad Max, you know, like the first one.
Yeah.
Especially with Mel Gibson. So it's kind of a little Mad Max's, because Mad Max was looking for revenge, you know, and of course Mad Max was wild, but I mean, kind of the same premise. But anyway, it's dystopian. It's not even a dying town. It's a dead town. So he rides in, and they're all sitting outside watching that train because they literally have nothing else to do. And so what I thought Georgia was, they know that any day that train could reveal what they did. So I think that's why. And when they saw MacReady get off that train, and they immediately got on his behind, they knew. Soon as they saw him, I think they sensed, okay, well, here's the reckoning for what we've done. So that, maybe I'm wrong. And again, we're on Facebook. Comment if you have a different idea. Let us know. And don't forget to hit the subscribe button so you can be aware when we do our podcast, so you won't miss a doggone thing. But yeah, go ahead on, Georgia. What else, what were you saying?
Well, one of the things that you notice about him very quickly on is he has an arm that appears to be useless to him. Right. And we learned that, you know, I mean, he's looking for this farmer that's there in the town. And when he mentions that, people, you can tell it's like a lightning rod or something.
Right.
They try to just shut him down immediately mm-hmm. when he mentions that. And we learn that this man is, when he mentions his name, is obviously a Japanese name.
Right.
And this is shortly after, you know, World War II has ended.
Yes.
And automatically, I mean, we're going to see the beginnings of what you find is a town with a big secret.
Right.
And it's a hate crime.
Yes.
And these people have all kinds of bullying attempts. The more he tries to find out or dig into how to find this person and what's happened, the more these people come down on him, and they come down on him harder and harder.
Right.
And then we eventually find out why he wants to find this person. And then we find out also why they're trying so hard to cover it up. But the way it all unfolds is really pretty juicy, because you've got all these people who play motion picture heavies. You know, you've got Ernest Borgnine and Lee Marvin and Robert Ryan. And one of the funny things that I wanted to say about Robert Ryan, I think he, to me, is one of the most underrated.
Totally. I put that in my notes as well.
He never got an Academy Award, but man, that guy, I mean, he could appear like somewhat in this movie. He is, you know what Spencer Tracy said about it? Spencer Tracy says to the director, he goes, and talking about Robert Ryan, he goes, Bob is so good in this part, he scares the hell out of me. And he'll scare the hell out of the audiences, too. Uh-huh. Because he can play, when you look at the scenes where
a total
where
sociopath,
Robert Ryan is,
a total psychopath, he was perfect. And he was so good looking. He was like a Ted Bundy type deal. Because he was handsome. He was gorgeous. Yeah. He would get you.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. The man was, but you get this like very slight veneer of calm.
Yes.
But underneath it, you know, an animal. It's Mount Vesuvius. He's going to go volley.
Right.
You know? So you've got Robert Ryan in there. And so even with him, you have this fantastic cast. Ernest Borgnine and Lee Marvin mm-hmm. also with him. And then one of the things that I think is interesting is that Ernest Borgnine was he and Spencer Tracy competed with each other for the Academy Award.
Yes.
And the person who got the Academy Award was Ernest Borgnine for Marty.
That's right.
Isn't that something? Yeah. And it wasn't this like bully tough guy role that he played, but it was the more gentle role,
right,
which I thought was interesting. But Spencer Tracy kind of felt like, mm-hmm. I shouldn't have gotten it.
if anybody who deserved it that year, because I've seen Marty, you know, we should do Marty. Let's do Marty. So add that to the list.
Okay.
Research department, add that to our list.
There we go, Marty.
We should definitely do Marty. It's a Betty's Ladies movie. But yeah, I found that interesting as well. And also what I found, so shout out to TCM. TCM screened this not too long ago. Dave Karger was the host. Dave Karger gave some of the trivia that you gave. And also somebody was doing on TCM, they'll have like a little piece on certain actors, and they talked about how, and it was on Robert Ryan, as people called him Bob, how underrated he was, how low key he was. He didn't hang with the Hollywood crowd. He hung out with his family. He was a family guy. And he, the exactly same thing that trivia was saying about how he scared Spencer Tracy. So in that second scene where they're at the gas pump on the TCM piece that does about Robert Ryan, look at how it's shot. Spencer Tracy sitting down. Robert Ryan is bullying him, needling him, but it's so, like you said, at Mount Vesuvius is so subtle. But the way it was shot, they wanted you, the audience, to listen to Robert Ryan going after taunting Spencer Tracy's character, MacReady, Robert Ryan's character is Smith. He's taunting MacReady, and MacReady is so calm and cool, but you're looking at MacReady because you're waiting for him to like either like kick at him or just jump up and run. I mean, you know, because that's the way, just it was a cat and mouse. This is a quintessential cat and mouse movie. And it's not a very long movie. It's simple, it's plain, it's out there. There's not a lot going on. But Georgia, didn't you feel like it drew you? You were in Black Rock. You were there with those people.
Yes.
And you were with, yes, you felt like you were in peril with Spencer Tracy. Brilliant.
I agree with you so much, Moy, because I felt like I was a spectator with him. It was the way it was shot, I think. There was, maybe it was the angles or whatever it was, that director was brilliant. But Moy, I couldn't have said it better than what you just said. I felt like I was in peril with him. It was so well done.
Right, right. And you mentioned Spencer's wardrobe. Tell us about that little trivia.
Well, this is what he did. He wasn't real happy with the way the wardrobe wanted to outfit him for the movie. So he went to a discount clothing store in downtown LA and bought two identical discount suits off the rack. And that is what he ended up wearing. That was his entire wardrobe for the shoot right there. And that gave him that look, you know?
Right, right. That everyday man look, and that mysterious look. Yes, because they were black. Like you said, they were dark. Looked like a funeral, like he was going to. And I think that was on purpose, because we can say this without giving away too much. The person who is looking for, you will never see that this person in the movie. I will just say that. We're not giving away too much, but I will say this. He may have been going, as the movie progressed, and he says it, that he may be going to his own funeral. Like, you know, it was survival. So that black suit, I think, was symbolic of death, you know, and his death or whoever's death, but death was certainly swirling around Black Rock. And it was spot on for him to get these two off the rack, everyday man, just whatever suits. And also, Georgia, with his character as the movie progressed, why Black Rock was so... And so you mentioned that Spielberg, and who else wanted to do it over? Tarantino?
Ron Howard.
Oh, Ron Howard. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
They both wanted to do
remakes of this movie, which really tells you
how much
they thought of how extremely well it was written and could be directed, and how meaty the roles and the storyline was. I mean, for them to want to do this.
Right.
Yeah.
I certainly hope they do. And another movie, I'll tell you. So I had a list of movies, because it's kind of an all-male cast that was kind of like this. Those of us who love David Mamet plays Glengarry Glen Ross. It was men going at each other. Some of them, you know, they got wild, and then some of them was subtle. The characters, you know, and go look at that movie. Maybe we should do that one too. We'll talk about that. 12 Angry Men. That was a guy movie, and people going at each other, subtle, and some of it not so subtle. People are bringing their own prejudices and personalities into it. And I just thought of another movie and it escapes me, but it's that type of male driven. So there's a word, I don't agree with it, but there's a word out there in a lexicon, toxic masculinity. I will say this movie is about toxic masculinity, as if, and only as if women can't do this. I mean, women do it. Like we saw it in The Women, women tearing each other down. I mean, if you're a human being, you have the capacity to be horrible to another human being. That's just life. That transcends race, gender, whatever. But if we want to go with the toxic masculinity, okay, yes, this would be that. Group thought, where you have one dude.
Wasn't he
a big fish in a little pond? Guys, there was nothing in this town. I don't even know how they ate. They must have ate the other people in the town. Because where was the store?
Well, that would explain though why there was no children, no teenagers. There was only one woman and Francis,
which is weird.
I mean, it was strange. It was very, very odd.
Right.
But you know, one of the things that really amazed me about this movie is after I watched, I thought, you know, there was the most leanest, sparest production design I think I've seen, because I like to look at sets, and then I also thought there was no special effects.
Nothing.
I mean,
very little music. We talked about that in our meeting.
It was the most leanest,
it was
sparest thing that I've seen. And I kept thinking, man, this was just, you know, I thought, well, you know, I would imagine they had kind of a small budget, but did pretty well at the box office. So, there was such an economy, you know, in everything, the dialogue, the, action, the writing, everything. But it was so powerful because with this particular kind of the way it was shot in the scenery, when something happened, when there was action, it was all of a sudden it felt so violent and it was so explosive.
Yes, I totally agree with that.
It exploded onto the screen.
It did not prepare you at all. Yeah, it didn't prepare you.
No, you weren't prepared. No. You're right. I was like, ah. <You know? laughs> I did it again.
This was a movie. This was my second time seeing it, and I hadn't seen it in ages. And of course, you know, I was younger then, and seeing it now, and like I said, now you have all these words, toxic masculinity, her group thought, and all that. So when I saw it then, I mean, so when you look at this hate crimes, that was not a word, and that's a word. Look, I'm not even gonna get into that. You know. Anyway, look, I don't care if I'm stabbing you to death, what's the difference? You know, you stabbed to death. You're no less stabbed to death if I did it in hate or I'm trying to rob you. You stabbed to death. You know, so anyway, that's that. But you can go ahead on and label this as a hate crime, like you said, racism, bigotry. All that.
Yeah.
But you're so right about the action, how it just exploded, because it was so well paced and the dialogue. And so what about you? I thought this was another actor studio, another acting clinic. What do you think?
Oh my goodness. Yes. I have to agree with you, because you can show that, like, without much dialogue and the power or presence of a person's character or personality, you can convey so much, and you don't need to be quoting Shakespeare. You don't need to be like a stream of foul language. It doesn't have to be that. It's just extremely, the actors were at the, you got the best actors out there, the very best. I mean, you had every scene that Spencer Tracy was in, I mean, he commanded, well, him and Robert Ryan was huge.
They matched each other. They had to get an actor that could perfectly match anything Spencer Tracy threw out there. And he wasn't a method actor. I don't even know if that was out then. I think it was kind of just starting a method actor type thing. But they needed someone who could spar with him so subtly, because Tracy would have nuances in his performances. And if you weren't a very good actor, you would miss his cues and screw up the scene. But Robert Ryan was toe to toe with him. Even Ernest Borgnine, Lee Marvin, they, whatever, see, well, and Walter Brennan was excellent. Well, all these, yeah. But Georgia, all these people were Academy Award winners or nominees. So they had the best of the best in this gem of a movie.
They did. And you know what makes it so amazing to me is these people were filming this, a lot of it outdoors in extreme heat.
Right.
And then and to do as well as they all did.
Right.
It's a marvel.
Right.
At how they did that.
Right.
You know, because they would have been normally exhausted, but here they're bringing their A game every day and making it so convincing and making such a masterpiece here out of this movie.
Right. The other movie I thought about was Lord of the Flies. So that was a book or whatever. It was Lord of the Flies because you had one dude running everybody. And so the scene that really was, and I'm glad they didn't run with this because it would have ruined the movie. The scene where they're in the diner and Spencer Tracy and Robert Ryan are going at it. And when Spencer Tracy says, you know, after you kill me, you got to kill the rest of these guys. He said, because they have something on you. And pay attention to Lee Marvin's face. Lee Marvin is sitting down and he shoots a look over to Robert Ryan like, duh, I never thought about that. Because that's just how freaking stupid they are. And following this dude in this no horse town, ain't even a one horse town. And it's just so funny how you see how people can get bullied by somebody who has nothing. And so going back to Robert Ryan's character, so he tried to enlist after the Pearl Harbor attack. Yeah. He didn't get in. That burned him up and set him on this dark path of racism and bigotry. And like I said, we don't want to give away too much, but it is so relevant today. Like when we see people go out, they'll have these manifestos online or they write stuff and they go out and shoot up people and kill. So you see how and innocent people have nothing to do with your failures as a human being go out and set it off. And so this movie was speaking to that way back in 1955.
Yeah. It did. And, you know, I think this was probably the very first movie that really dared to touch on the subject of how the Japanese Americans were treated.
Yes. Yes.
After the war was over. This was the first one to actually to have enough bravery, you know,
yes,
to go into that.
Yes.
Because it wasn't that long ago that they were held in the internment camps.
Right.
And so, yeah, this movie is, in a way, it's a little bit ahead of its time.
It is. And I'm so glad they were able to get it made. We did mention Anne Francis, Miss Kitty West herself. And I think, and so foreshadowing,
Honey because West.
Honey West. And I'm getting Miss Kitty putting in there from Gunsmoke. But yeah, Honey West, which kind of a little sidebar. So John Erickson was in Honey West with her. I think that was John.
Oh.
I want to say that was him. I think that was him. He was the her partner. And correct me if I'm wrong. Anyway, all I know I saw was a very looking man, good looking man. So he and John Erickson was very good looking. So
yes,
pardon me if I'm wrong. But anyway, they played the brother and sister. And just a little sidebar, George, I'm glad I can talk about Honey West. That show is underrated. Whenever they talk about strong women and film,
yes,
and all that, they never talk about Honey West. And I'm like, please, there would be no action, no Miss Marvel and all these different people in these action movies, and there would have been no Charlie's Angels or whatever without Honey West. And I don't know why I don't talk about that movie. I mean, that show, it was great.
TV show.
Yeah, it was great. So I don't know. But anyway, Anne Francis is the only she played those movies a lot. Remember, she was the only female on Lost Planet with Leslie Nielsen and all that? I was like, something not kosher about that, but that's just me, I guess, you know. I don't know, dirty mind, I don't know. But she was the only female. And let's talk about this. If I had, and I don't have, I don't even think this is a real gripe. I think it was realistic for her to do what she did. We're not going to tell you what she did, But she did something really foul to MacReady's character to kind of towards the end of the movie. And I guess it was realistic, but on the same token, I was surprised that they made her not have her own mind. And that's, and I'm gonna just leave it like that. What do you think about what I'm saying?
I kept hoping that somehow, some way she would redeem herself and, you know, the better angels of her character would rise to the top. I was, in a way, shocked. You know, but in a way, not, because, I mean, you know, she was a part of this pack. This was her, it was kind right. of, you know, she was
part of this tribe and everything. I guess, yeah.
And I felt that this was such a betrayal there. And he didn't have any, I think it hurt because he really didn't have anybody else. It just really pointed to the isolated aspect of this whole situation that he was involved in. When she, because that was, I think everybody besides me was holding, I hope that maybe, that just maybe she would come through and help. Because, you know, after, at the beginning, she loans him the
right.
Jeep.
So MacReady, yeah, MacReady. Yeah, she loans him
she
the
loans
Jeep.
She loans MacReady the yeah. Jeep. Yes, yeah. Mm-hmm. She does. And so I was hoping that in some way she would maybe be the one person in the whole town that would be redeem themselves in
right.
some way.
Mm-hmm. And it backfired on her without giving too much details. Oh. But if you really want to go there, she was, and it's not clear if she and Robert Ryan's character Smith were having a relationship. I think there was something there, even though he was like way older than her. Do you think they were in a relationship?
Ooh, you know, I didn't really consider that mm-hmm. much.
There was something going on there, I think. Because this is the stuff they were saying. I will say this. If it was a relationship, it was highly manipulative, and she was, he was mentally abusing her. Because when she loaned MacReady, you know, she rented it. She rented him the Jeep. And Robert Ryan verbally abused her. And then further on in the movie, she was done. And you're right. And I love how the movie tried to make you think that she would have some type of hand in, you know, resolving the issue of what happened to the farmer. But, you know, she did not. Her brother did. But I'm glad they didn't cop that out, because usually it's always the woman who has the heart of gold. And I'm kind of sick of that storyline. You know, it has to fit.
Yeah.
And for them to tell this movie, well, you're right, was so ahead of itself. You did not know what was going to happen. And it was so off the usuals of how Hollywood movies. So it was a turning point in Hollywood. I think Doris Sherry, I think he produced this. And so MGM. And he was thinking a new way about how to do movies. Cause like we said earlier, it was film noir. It was a thriller, a drama, a mystery, a Western, an action movie, all into one. And I think Doris Sherry was responsible for trying to bring that new vibe to MGM. And something that we also talked about, Georgia, the symbolism of the dystopian community. This was in 55. Civil rights movement was just getting in its very beginning stages. It was on the horizon, but I think it was commenting on this old way of thinking and bigotry is dying. It's on the way out. And that community of those few people, and that how just dead it was and that train that only came a few days a week. That
once
was,
every 4 years. That was the first time it had been there in 4 years.
Oh my gosh, you're right. Once every 4 years, they had a dose of reality. Hilarious. The world, so I think it's even more symbolic. The world had left these people behind. Isn't that crazy? Because they were still like doing telegraph and Morse code or whatever. I'm like,
oh, yeah. That's right.
Are you crazy? Like, that's okay, right. Where's the smoke signals? Are you nuts? Where's your carrier pigeons? Crazy. They were being left behind.
He would have gone to a phone and called. Yeah, that one time MacReady tries to get some help. He tries to send a telegraph.
Yeah, like who's still doing telegraphs in 1945? I mean, people still did it, but I mean, hello, telephone. You know, right?
Yeah. Oh my! And even that, well, that gets sabotaged.
Right. So. I don't know. I think on my end, I'm trying to think if there's anything else. I know we're probably leaving out some trivia I wanted to say, but I don't want to say anything else because I don't want to give too much else away, Georgia. So I'm gonna let you go ahead on and say whatever you have to say, because I know if I keep talking, I'm gonna give it away. I know I will.
Well, you know, this is something I found out that was very interesting about this movie. Of the four leading men, mm-hmm. you've got Spencer Tracy, Robert Ryan, Lee Marvin, and Ernest Borgnine. Three of those men were veterans, and one was not. Guess which one was not the veteran?
Spencer Tracy?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
Give the lady a cigar. You got her right. Okay. Spencer Tracy was not a veteran, but yet he was the one who played the veteran.
Right.
And then the other one, those men that I just named, Robert Ryan, Lee Marvin, and Ernest Borgnine, they were all veterans. And in fact, Lee Marvin was decorated he was decorated during World War II. Lee Marvin was.
Amazingly. I love Lee Marvin. Love Lee Marvin.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Isn't that something? And, this movie has a lot, I think, to me, a lot of interesting backstory to it. Mm-hmm. Tracy at first didn't want to take on the role because he was feeling that he was just maybe, you know, he's all white haired and he's, already up in years and everything. But he said, if you give me something that sets this character apart, because how am I going to convincingly go against all these outnumbered by all these tough guys.
Right.
And believe it or not, he said, if you give me this like handicap where I only have one arm to mm-hmm. use, he goes, it'll make my character more interesting.
Yes.
And I can play with something more interesting like that. And I'll do the part.
It did.
And that's how they talked him in
to
playing this role.
And Dave Cargo also said that they threatened it. They lied and said Alan Ladd was interested in the movie. And so that primed the pump too. Mm-hmm. Prime the pump.
Oh yeah. That's what got him going. But you know, I think that his playing against expectations like that is what made his character all the more stunning in this movie.
Yes.
Because you just don't really expect him to be able to come out like he comes out. Right. I'll just say that.
And he handles himself. Don't let that one on fool you. It's an action movie. Yeah.
Well, you know, what I also found out was, you know, they've had this screening room projectionist at the White House for many, many, many years. And you know what the projectionist said? He said that this is one of the most frequently shown movies at the White House.
I can see why. And that's a whole nother talk show. But I can certainly see You Against the World, all the pressure. Yes. Yeah, I can certainly see that.
Well, I also wanted to tell our listeners that Tracy generally was a pretty hard drinker. But when he was in a movie, he was so Spartan, he didn't drink at all. But because of the heat, I mean, this movie was filmed in June and July in the California high desert, and it was hot. Mm-hmm. And so, Tracy would have a happy hour at the end of shooting every day. He'd invite everybody up to his hotel room. Now, they would be drinking, but he would be drinking 7-Up. But as soon as the filming ended, he would go on a bender. I was just really very amazed that the people in this movie were able to pull it off so well with everybody succumbing to the heat and being so exhausted. And to me, that's pretty impressive because right now we're going through a really... really powerful heat wave right now.
Oh yeah, yeah, so, right. Yeah, we're getting through it.
We're getting through it. And you know, one of the things that I just wanted to give props and kudos to was, you know, Robert Ryan as an actor, because even Spencer Tracy said, and this high praise indeed coming from him, and he said, You know, Bob is so good in this role that he scares the hell out of me. And he'll scare the hell out of the audience,
yes,
too.
Yes, yes.
So, you know, you have to notice one thing about this movie, and I don't think I'm giving anything away, but even though when you notice how the plight of Japanese Americans and how they're treated about the war mm-hmm. is kind of a central theme in this movie, look to see at the end of the movie and ask yourself this one question. How many actual Japanese Americans appeared on the screen in this movie?
Yep. Yep. And I mean, like I said, I don't want to give it away for good, in my opinion, for good reason, because it added to the plot. I'll just say it like that. Now, again, if you disagree with anything we're saying or you agree with it or you want to comment, please hit us up on Facebook. Do not forget to subscribe, okay? So you can get notified when we are having these podcasts and broadcasts. Our handle is, it's for Facebook, it's How Bette Davis Saved My Life. Our page is How Bette Davis Saved My Life. Our handle is at Betty's Ladies. And again, we're on Facebook. So we would love to hear from you. We would love, absolutely love to hear from you and get your thoughts. And so the reason and conclusion that we want you to see Bad Day at Black Rock, because it's just an excellent movie. It's timeless. And especially in the times that we're in now, either you're going to, and I always do this, you're either going to identify with Spencer Tracy or Robert Ryan. And, you know, hey, it is what it is, you know, and let us know that. Hey, this is a safe space. That's another word. This is safe. Look, you safe from me and Georgia. Now, if y'all won't go on and on each other on Facebook, well, you know, we'll handle that when we can. But no, express yourself, because that's how we keep these movies alive and going. One last thing, I just thought of something, Georgia, that Spencer Tracy knew he was winding down in his career, and that he had a contract with MGM that he would only do one movie a year, and he could have his pick. Now he was living his best life, wasn't he? He was going to do what he wanted to do, when he wanted to do it, and get paid for it. That ain't the not the American dream, just the life dream of anybody. I mean, just so, but he deserved it. Spencer Tracy, he is the actor's actor. And I think he was voted the number one actor of all time, I think. Either him or Bogart, but I think it might have been Tracy. Tracy and Hepburn, of course, they were a couple. Yeah, so if you want to learn how to act and on a cheap and not pay for acting lessons, just look at Spencer Tracy movies and you'll learn something. Right. He was brilliant.
I agree.
Brilliant. Brilliant. Wow. Well, that's it. Because George and I can talk. We always say we love to talk, and we will give too much of it away. Georgia May, is there anything else you want to say?
No, I think that's a wrap.
You think that's a wrap? All right. Well, again, please let us know what you think of our broadcast, our podcast, and hit that subscription button, and you will be kept up to date and alerted when we have more broadcasts. So for How Bette Davis Saved My Life, Life Lessons from Hollywood, I am Moya.
And I'm Georgia.
And we can't wait to see you next time. And don't forget, always be the star of your own fabulous production. Till next time, guys, take us out, Rufus and Shaka.